You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers as always. I'm one of the lovely hosts of this show, Tony East, covering the Pacers for the Fieldhouse and Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. And today should be a fun one. We are going to talk some Jazz ahead of tonight's game. The Jazz could be without Rudy Gobert, which completely changes the calculus of how you talk about the Utah Jazz. We'll get into all that. And then I just wrote a feature on Doug McDermott. I want to talk about some Doug McDermott, and I want to check in on some of the lineups. Some key lineups that I want to check in on, the Turbonus duo and the starting five sans Vic. So we're just going to run through some stats for the big lineups. But we're going to start with my man Doug McDermott, because I just wrote a thing on him. And it's fun to talk about players who are killing it and not getting enough credit. And Doug is the first guy on that list. So I chatted with him after the game against the Magic about how he's shooting, about how he's being covered, about why he thinks he's shooting so well this year. So before we talk about him and what he said, just a quick just to show how effective so far he's been shooting the ball this year. So he's the only player, I mean, obviously the season's not over and I expect these numbers to change, they will, but he's the only player right now in Pacers franchise history taking more than 8.5 threes per 100 possessions and hitting over 45% of them. He's the only one who's ever done that. In Pacers franchise history, only 10 guys, not even 10, there's been 10 seasons where a guy has taken as many threes per 100 possessions, that 8.5 number, as he is, and hit over 40%. That would be Aaron Holiday this year, amazingly. He should probably be talked about more as his shooting. Chris Copeland, Rasal Butler, Chris Mullin, CJ Miles, Paul George, and Reggie Miller twice. Oh, and Danny Granger. So that's your group with Reggie sneaking in twice. That's a pretty dang good group of shooters. obviously you're not getting a ton of minutes out of the Copeland, Mullen, Butler groups. I think only one of those guys exceeded 500 minutes, and Paul George did it in the season that he only played 6 games. So really the only guys to do it in a full, a substantial number of minutes were Miles, Reggie twice, and Danny Granger. Like, McDermott is just going scorched earth and taking a ton of shots. That is super rare, and I think he's been a big reason for the resurgence of the bench, is that, you know, it took a few games, but he got the two-game chemistry down with McConnell. He got the two-game chemistry down with Sabonis. All of a sudden, he's getting these shots whenever he wants. And, you know, the first thing I asked him was just straight up, like, you're shooting more than last year and more than ever in your career. And that's kind of odd. You know, you're 28. It's not odd. You know, you're a good shooter. You should shoot. But you're 28. You know, why are you getting more shots? And beyond the Pacers just feeding him more, he said he's just being more aggressive. And that's kind of interesting to me that's, you know, there's not like a huge schematic change or anything like that. He's just hunting more shots. And he's getting them. He's touching the ball more often than last year. He's up about 4 touches a game, which is nice. And he's touching the ball longer when he does catch it. I didn't even know the NBA tracked your seconds per touch. They got everything. He's holding the ball for longer, so you know he's being asked to do more, like read the defense or set up a two-man game. He's just being more involved because they trust him more. They know what his shooting profile can be, and it's working. He is just killing everything. He just cannot miss. But back to the two-man game. You know, he specifically said, you know, obviously just, you know, oh, I'm going to be more aggressive. Like, that doesn't get you more shots. He also said, quote, having a point guard like TJ McConnell, who really gets in the lane and is always looking for his teammates, that's huge. It's great to have a guy like that. So that's obviously a big thing. Corey Joseph, for however much I loved him and his energy and defensive effort, he does not have the ability that McConnell has, and has especially had the last 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, to dribble into the lane, take what the defense is giving you, and set up another man. You know, McConnell almost every game afterwards talks about how he believes the duty of a point guard is to pass and set up his teammates. And he's super good. He's been super good at it of late, and the bench is humming. And McDermott's got this chemistry with him. He's been assisted on 50 makes. McDermott has this year. 18 of them have come from the mighty McConnell. And 7 have come from Sabonis. Those are his top 2 guys. He has also a 7 from Aaron Holiday, so I guess maybe not technically his top 2. But, you know, we've seen the two-man chemistry with Sabonis as well. They run that little handoff, dribble handoff into pick-and-roll thing on the wing with Sabonis and McDermott all the time. If the defense goes and defends McDermott's shot, all of a sudden Sabonis has an open run to the rim. So those two guys have been awesome together. And McDermott loves playing with them, he said. And he also said something interesting that is not related to what I wanted to talk about here. But he said, quote, once our guys get healthier, we're still going to stick together on the second unit, which is good. So I don't know if he knows or not what the second unit's going to be when everybody's healthy. But the fact that he, A, said that, and B, says once our guys get healthy, I guess this is all the same point. The fact that he said that to me means that he, you know, has some sort of inkling about what the second unit will be when everybody is healthy. And he said we're going to stick together. And I'm pretty sure at that time he was just talking about McConnell. So I think it's safe to say McDermott's a lock for the reserves this year. But yeah, he, you know, Sabonis and McConnell really setting him up. Those high IQ guys all do well together. And his most assists to one player is Sabonis with 6. So they clearly have a two-man chemistry. And, you know, we talked about guys running him off the line and, you know, what he's working on now that, you know, the game's getting more modern and he's supposed to shoot more, but at the same time, teams defend him more. And he says he's got to finish better at the rim, and he's shooting actually a career worst at the rim. So eventually that will get better, but I loved, you know, just how candid he was with me about, you know, just being aggressive and playing with the right guys, how much that's helped him, and how much easier it has been for him this year now that he's in the right mindset. And there's always, you know, the other thing where last summer he had to deal with free agency. This summer he could just work on stuff and be around the team. You know, he's looking good this year. And if his finishing comes around, he's going to be dangerous because his efficiency has been incredible so far. So I just, yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about it on the show just because I like when players, you know, tell me cool stuff about their season. And Doug McDermott's a fun guy to talk to. He's been playing well this year, and he's been more open to talking. But now I can't decide if I want to talk Jazz or Linus first. So I'll do the Jazz, but after, of course, a short break. Hey, so Thanksgiving is tomorrow. And that's exciting because obviously you get to eat a bunch of food and it's a no-lose day. It's just all good food and football. You know how else you can't lose? Is using MyBookie. And of course, we've been talking about their Thanksgiving special forever. I got to do it one more time with Thanksgiving coming up tomorrow. For this week only, the lovely my people at MyBookie.ag are offering a risk-free bet on that Bears-Lions game. I've told you about it before. I'm going to keep doing it because it's great. I'm doing it. You can pick any team against the spread for up to $250. If you win, you get the money. If you lose, they'll give you your money back. Literally cannot lose. It's amazing. In their ad read for your lovely Thanksgiving pun, it says, it's no risk, all gravy. Hell yeah, you gotta love that. Just log into mybookie.ag, make your first deposit with the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, all caps, one word. They will match your deposit dollar for dollar to jumpstart your betting bankroll, and you can do that awesome Thanksgiving no risk bet. That's mybookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. Use that code LOCKEDONNBA. The mighty Utah Jazz, folks, they're on a tour day East Coast. I'm not even sure that that's the right way to put it. They just played in Milwaukee. That's not even the East Coast, but they're headed east. Now then they have Indiana, Memphis, Toronto, Philly all on the road. So a nice, tough five-game road trip for the Jazz. And it could not have come at a worse time for them because Rudy Gobert currently has an injured ankle. He did not play in their game against the Bucks. And they still almost won. They hung tough. They lost by 4, I believe, 118-122. They started Tony Bradley at center. So Tony Bradley was their first-round pick 2016 or 2017. Not a particularly proven player. He went to, I believe, North Carolina. Good rebounder, but pretty limited. He started because Ed Davis is also hurt. But you know, the fact that they're having to go that far down and still hanging with the Bucks is interesting. You know, I think they're clearly an okay basketball team who has been better than I thought they would do without Gobert in that game. But, you know, it was just one game as well. I don't expect that to be a sustainable thing for this Jazz team because Gobert is a beast. Like, Giannis had 50. You know, they still struggled mightily with defense. And Bradley, for his own part in that game, had 11 rebounds and 8 points. and was still a minus six because the Bucks starters just dominated him, with Giannis being able to get to the rim in that game. The Jazz bench did better, but I think it changes the whole calculus of the way you play the Jazz when they don't have Gobert, because we all know about Bojan. You know, he is back. He's spreading the floor for them, and Royce O'Neal's hitting these threes and spacing the floor for this team. But really, a lot of their spacing, you know, why it's so helpful and aidful is at the end of possessions when they run a pick and roll with Gobert. He's such a good lob threat that all the space makes him deadly when he's rolling to the rim. Tony Bradley is not that guy. Suddenly their spacing means a little bit less when you don't have to think about helping in and tagging the roller, because, you know, he's not as dangerous of a finisher, or he's not a lob guy. And they actually got some still hot shooting against the Bucks, but I would not be as worried about the 3-point. They shot really well from three against the Bucks. They were 21-45, but I just wouldn't be as worried about their 3-point shooting without Gobert. And I know that's like how spacing affects the inside and vice versa kind of deal, but I just thought that was an interesting thought. You know, they kind of struggled with the Warriors a couple games ago. I think that was before he got hurt, actually. But 2 games ago, they played the Pelicans, and he did not play. And they got a bunch of attempts up from three as well. But, you know, some worse games. Mike Conley was 1-for-4. Joe Ingles was 1-for-5. So I think there's some push and pull with other 3-point shooting without Gobert. So it definitely hurts them on offense. And obviously, as the best defensive player in basketball, it will hurt them on defense. So I think him being out, if he does not play, will pretty much help everybody. But, you know, Miles especially being able to linger more off of Tony Bradley should help clog up some driving lanes and hurt the Jazz in that way as well. And then on the other end, Gobert can obviously defend the rim better than anyone in basketball. Tony Bradley cannot. One, Miles will be able to pull Bradley away from the rim. Two, if he can't, anyone can still have a chance, at least, of putting up a productive shot driving to the basket with Tony Bradley protecting the paint versus Rudy Gobert. So just a huge, huge swing for the Jazz if he's not out. If he does play, that changes everything. Then Miles' performance becomes just massive. And Miles did okay against the Jazz last year, if I recall correctly, though I don't have those numbers in front of me. But just being able to make Gobert take one step higher, like not even a whole step, just like a half step higher, helps so much. And the problem is, I think they're going to put Gobert on Sabonis. But, you know, in those moments where it is Miles versus Gobert, and, you know, Sabonis has been the first sub out to try to stagger the centers recently, which is something else that should be talked about. But I think those moments where it is Miles Gobert will go pretty well for the Pacers. And I think Sabonis is good and can do a good job. And he actually had some moments scoring on Rudy last year. And I'm harping on Rudy. I need to talk about the rest of the team. But it's just going to be a little bit harder just because of the way he plays to get shots up. So the Jazz do have a roster outside of Rudy Gobert. I just wanted to talk about him. One of those guys is Bojan, the all-too-familiar man. You all remember how much I loved him on this show. He is just chucking this year. Basically 7 three-point attempts a game. He's hitting 46%, 21 points a game. He is 47-46-88 splits this season. So he's very close to 50-40-90. Basically everything the Jazz need to be, because Mike Conley, on the flip side, another Tony Stan guy, because he's from Indy, has not been very awesome. 37% shooting, 34.8% from deep for Conley. And he's supposed to be their setup man, less than 5 assists per game. I think that's one of the Jazz, you know, they have a pretty complicated offense, and it usually gels later on in the season better than it does at the beginning. But they have not had the best ball sharing creation this year, it looks like. From the few times I've watched them, they kind of rely on guys to get their own shot up, whether that's in actions or not. It doesn't necessarily mean that's a bad thing. You know, Conley can capably get a shot up in the pick and roll. Donovan Mitchell can get a good shot up all the time. It's just how this team plays, and it's kind of interesting to see how that's been. I know their shot profile has been way different than it was last year. They're like 5 threes per game lower, which is interesting given that some of the guys they swapped out. So I think if you're going to know that, you know, with Conley and Mitchell, you have to be prepared for them to drive and less often pull up. You know, Mitchell's going to take them. He's taken over 6 a game this year and hitting a ton of them. But you have to be prepared for those guys to drive and not pass as often as you would expect, just given the way the Jazz usually play. Another guy who's been awesome for them to watch for is Royce O'Neal. Royce O'Neal's almost certainly going to guard TJ Warren in this game. He's a tremendous defender. And he's just shooting the lights out. 2.5 threes a game, hitting 51.2%. That's just insane. That's like the perfect role-playing starter on any good team. It's just like, yeah, you go play awesome defense and then shoot the three when we throw you the ball. And he's been really helpful for the Jazz. There's a reason he's playing the fifth most minutes. He has jumped Joe Ingles in minutes, which is very interesting. Not that that's like bad. He's been very good. It's just Ingles was so good for them last year. I thought the Ingles Bogdanovich wing combo would be fun, but Ingles has been coming off the bench. He's been struggling, so who knows? Another Tony favorite, Jeff Green's on this team, doing big stuff for them. As a solid guy, shooting the ball from three this year, but not so much inside the arc. But their bench is really solid. A lot of teams we've been talking about recently, we've talked about how the Pacers have, me and Adam at least, have talked about how the Pacers have some sort of advantage on the bench with the way their bench has been playing. But even without Ed Davis, the Jazz still have, you know, Ingles, like I said, Jeff Green, Emmanuel Mudiay. Those guys can all play to a certain extent. Georges Niang is okay. They've just got solid, capable guys off their bench that make them good, and they'll probably go 9 or 10 deep in this game. If they have to go 10 deep, maybe we'll see Juwan Morgan, IU legend in this game, but he has not yet played for them this season. Still, though, they have, you know, they have a capable bench, and that's harder to beat, especially when they have the Defensive Player of the Year in, or, you know, an all-star, fringe all-star guy, and Mitchell in almost all the time. So it's going to be imperative for the Pacers bench to step up in this game. If McDermott can keep slinging and McConnell can keep creating shots, I don't think they'll have too much trouble at least keeping pace, but they've been separating the Pacers from their opponent recently. I think that's going to be pretty hard against this Jazz team. But if Rudy does not play, I think the Pacers win pretty easily. They beat the Jazz both times last year, and he played both times. Obviously, they got better, but he's such a massive part of what they do. I don't think that the Pacers will have any trouble. If he does play, it's going to be very close. But I think I would take the Jazz just because they'd have basically an all-star center, a 21 points per game scorer, and an all-star guard all playing. And a revenge game opportunity for Bojan. So just a lot of fun coming up in this game with Bojan and Gobert, two guys I love to watch, and Mitchell's amazing. But it's going to be a tough one if Gobert plays. He makes everything tough. He basically guarantees a top three defense for the opponent. So keep an eye on the injury report and keep an eye on a lot of their guys. They're a good basketball team. Speaking of good basketball stuff, we got to talk about the Sans Oladipo starting five and the Trabonis group. So let's take a break and talk about those real quick, and I'll get you guys out of here. The starting five is kind of, sort of back, kind of not, kind of yes. Anyway, the point here being, we got to see an extended full game against the Grizzlies of Brogdon, Lamb, Warren, Turner, Sabonis. That was only the second time, really, all season we've seen them all play. You know, they played in the opening night game, and they did a fine job, I guess. I think they outscored the Pistons that game, and then they played against the Nets for about 8 minutes before Turner got hurt, and then they did not get a chance until this game to finally all be back together. So they have now officially played 39 minutes with what they thought would be their starting five to open the season. That's kind of nuts and really illustrates how banged up they've been. So an alarming jump in your face stat. 39 minutes. Their offensive rating is 115. That is insane. They've been really good at generating nice shots from wherever they want. However, they've been canning threes at an unsustainably high rate. They're hitting 60% from deep. That will not keep up, but they're just getting good shots. You know, they're shooting 53% at the rim. That's not good. That'll get better. But they're shooting over a quarter of their shots at the rim. And the play-by-play data tracks rim or three frequency. Half their shots are from at the rim or from deep. And yeah, the number could even get higher. But you know, just given the guys they have in there, that's good enough. And they're just making a lot of stuff. And it's not like they've been taking bad shots. I think they can generate the shots they've been making. Obviously, they'll make less of the threes again, like I said. But so far, so good for them. On the offensive end of the floor, it's been very impressive to me. Their shot quality has been pretty good. So that should maintain. And the other one is that they're plus 20. They've scored 92 points on 80 possessions. Their opponents have scored 72 points on 80 possessions. Sometimes those possession counts don't line up exactly just because of turnovers and end of quarters and things like that. But 72 points on 80 possessions is 90 for their defensive rating. They've been extremely good on defense. And that comes with opponents shooting 41% from three, which, you know, even that's probably unsustainably high. So their defense has just been really good. They've been really good at containing two-pointers. Shocker. A lineup with Turner in it has been good at containing two, 33% from two. That's not going to maintain. That'll go up. But they've done a fantastic job defending shots and forcing opponents into, you know, they're actually giving up shots from not quite the areas you want, from that 50% rim or three frequency. The Pacers, they have on offense. Their defense, that's like 70%. That's not good. But they're forcing misses. You know, they've got Turner to contest those. They've got Warren playing better defense this year. I mean, obviously, I think that there will be some progression from other teams. But so far, so good. They've looked good on offense and hit their shots. And they've forced tough shots from their opponent. And that's about all you can, you know, in the grand scheme of 5-on-5 basketball, that's about all you can ask for. And I don't, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see how it looks with Vic. You know, I think it'll be better. They'll be getting to the rim more and getting to the line more. Their defense will tick up because Brogdon can focus more on that end, and they'll have a little more creation. Things should all be a little bit better, but I'm just very intrigued by how they're doing now and how that's going to look when Oladipo is thrust back in. So the other thing that we've all been watching all season for forever, the mighty Trebonis duo. I mean, I like talking about how they play together instead of pitting them against each other all the time, personally, because debating is not fun when there's nothing they can do about it at this point in time. Anywho, unlike the starters, the Miles Sabonis minutes, 177 of them, 177. I don't know how I couldn't get that out. 177 of them now have gone, I'd give them an 384 points on 357 possessions. With both big men on the floor. I just typed a number that definitely is wrong. Yes, I typed 3,567. Their defensive rating is not 10. Their defensive rating is 107. Their offense rating is 107.5. That's pretty good. That's probably about league average levels of offense. But their defense has been worse than last year. 388 points allowed on 358 possessions. They're slightly off there from last time. That's a 108.4 defensive rating, so they've been outscored by 4 points so far. But I think the big thing for this group, from what I've seen, is they give up a lot of threes. 112 in the 177 minutes is a ton to give up. Over 41% of those have gone in so far. And I think it's just obvious that with those two guys out there, that's going to happen, right? They really struggle to... One of them is usually going to struggle shuffling out to contest that three, and there's a reason they're getting a bunch up. And it's not like a ton of them come from the corners. Only 7% given up from the corners. They're giving up a ton of above the break threes, which in theory is the best three to give up. But you know, they're just giving up a ton because they shuffle in too far. They have big man instincts. They're used to defending the paint. You know, Turner and Sabonis are they just can't shuffle out quite fast enough, and it's going to make it hard for them. You know, this problem persisted last year. They just did a better job. The teams made less. They did a better job defending at the rim, things like that, to keep their defensive rating so low. This time, not as good. Now, on the flip side, they're only less than 50% of twos are going in. They've done a good job there. And the shot quality they've given up with those two on the floor is actually lower than the starting five group that we just looked at. So they're doing a pretty good job of limiting, you know, shots that you don't want to give up. But at the same time, their offense has not been awesome. It's basically been a little below average, and they're giving up a ton of threes. And I think that is where the rubber is going to meet the road, because we've talked about their perimeter defense for one of them for a long time. You know, one of them is going to have to get good at it. But it has to. It's not even that necessarily that one of them has to get so good at, like, shutting a guy down on the perimeter to me. It's more so that they just have to get good at running good shooters off the line, because they're so tall, right? Just obviously, in comparison, shooting over TJ Warren or shooting over Sabonis. Shooting over Sabonis, if they both have the same footwork, is harder because he's taller. But if his footwork is worse, it's basically easier because he's farther away, or he's got the wrong hand up, or he's coming from a weird angle. All these sorts of things that would make it easier or harder. So if Sabonis or Turner, you know, I'd never want... You know, Turner had some terrible closeouts in that Magic game when they got hot in that third quarter. But one of them's going to have to get better, preferably both, obviously, but one of them's going to have to get better at closing out hard, shuffling the feet. I think Sabonis did okay at that on opening night, but he's not been as good since, and their D's really slipped, and it's going to have to get better if they want to be a more sustainable long-term duo, because they have not exactly had a murderer's row of schedule. By that, I mean they've had a pretty easy schedule, and yet they've been outscored and have a 108 defensive rating. I think they're going to have to get a little better at not giving up as many threes. But it's not been so bad. You know, their offense has been better than last year and things like that. So we'll see how it goes. But that's all I wanted to talk about today. It's going to be a fun game night. The Jazz are a good team. It's always fun to see the Pacers play against good teams. We might be back tomorrow. I'm not exactly sure what Adam's plan is yet, but I will say he's not going to listen to this. So it's on him. It's his decision to do a show or not. So if he doesn't do one for you guys, you can blame him for not doing an episode. But thank you guys for listening. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. We tweet during games a lot, and we tweet out every show. You can follow me at TEastNBA. I tweet way too much about Pacers all the time, so if you can't get enough, follow me. Thank you guys for listening, and we will see you soon.